You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I know this song hits hard, great. Football Friday, which is what it is here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I get all that. But let's be honest. I mean, after that Sabres win last night, feels even better. We can crank it up now here at this part because big Sabres win last night against the, those New York Rangers. Did I sound like I was in Boston there? It doesn't matter. Here we go. One question to start today's Buffalo Football Friday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Sal Capaccio here, Josh Schmidt producing. One question for you, Josh. Have the Sabres turned a corner? Oh, be careful. What are you going to say about this? Yes or no? Come on now.
Every part of me wants to say yes, but every part of me has said yes for the past 13 years.
And we do this every year at some point, right?
It's too early to tell. It seems like it. It's too early to tell.
It's too early, but it looked really good the last two nights.
Talk to me last two games. Talk to me on Tuesday.
Okay, because
they play Calgary Saturday and Montreal Monday. That's two.
Two afternoon games, by the way, because Monday's a holiday.
Right, which is also a standalone game. Everyone in the NHL is going to be watching you on Monday.
Okay.
So, again, talk to me on Tuesday or even just Monday afternoon. I think, depending on how those two games go, it'll feel like they turned a corner. Right now,
and they're winnable games, by the way.
Right now, it's like when you're walking down the street about to turn a corner, you're like looking around the corner right now. You're not turned yet, but you're just like looking to see if anyone's coming. That's where they are right now.
Yeah. I have to look at, yes, we're starting with the Sabres because they had a very nice win last night over the New York Rangers, 6-1. I mean, they chased Shesterkin. I mean, crazy. 6 minutes left in the second period, they chased him.
2 hours before puck drop, Kevin Weeks was tweeting that there's like movement on his deal. Like, he wasn't saying it was directly Shesterkin, but he put a picture of the New York skyline and also put $11.5 million, which is what he reportedly wants for his next contract. And then he goes out there and gives up 5 goals on 12 shots. I'm not saying it's going to destroy his contract negotiations.
Well, because he's a good goalie.
But it's
he had a bad night. It happens, right? But here's the other part of this. Sabres now come back home feeling really good after a homestand. They come back home again for two more games. And like you said, afternoon games. We're going to talk about the Sabres in the 11 o'clock hour with Brian Cozio. Paul is actually on his way back from New York, so he can't join me. But I got to get a Sabres vibe check today, even though it's a Buffalo Football Friday, because that felt good last night. That felt good to watch while we were watching Thursday Night Football, which we'll get to in a little while. So we'll do all that today here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in. And of course, we will have Bills head coach Sean McDermott. He is scheduled to join me at 10:45 a.m. All right, we say it. Keep your head, ears, eyes, everything else on a swivel. You never know if the Bills head coach calls and gets in a little bit early or a little bit later. They always have meetings going on. Depends on exactly when the meeting ends. He has other production meetings to do as well with TV for the weekend. So 10:45 is the scheduled time for Bills head coach Sean McDermott, and we will hopefully bring him to you right at that time. We'll get an injury update. Not a lot of injuries. I mean, it's kind of weird. You look at the injury report for the Bills. There are a lot of names. There are 19 names, I believe I counted yesterday, on the injury report. Out of those 19 names, though, that's a lot, right? Oh, my God, 19 names. Out of those 19 names, only one did not practice. So 18 of the other guys practiced, which means 52 of the 52, actually 53 yesterday, then they released someone, Zion Logue. They have an empty roster spot, which we'll get to in a minute. They had all 52 players, yesterday 53, on the active roster practice except for Keon Coleman, which was interesting because Coleman did not practice on Wednesday with his wrist injury. We know what happened during the game against the Miami Dolphins. He got hit by Jordan Poyer. There was a flag on the play for hitting him in the helmet, but his right arm wrist area was kind of pressed and hit and sandwiched between the helmet and his chest plate, it looked like, on the replay, and that's where the injury came from. He was seen in the locker room after with a brace on his right wrist. Well, yesterday, even though he didn't practice, no brace, no wrap, which I find super interesting because if you're going to have like a significant injury to that area of the body, you'd think that you'd be having some sort of brace, some sort of wrap to protect it. That's not the case. Now, he didn't practice yesterday. He was on the field. He took team stretching. We saw him. And then he went off to the side with trainers and did a lot of conditioning work. Didn't catch any passes. So I would think it's probably trending towards him not playing. We'll get that official word maybe from Sean McDermott when he joins me here a little over a half hour. But I think the encouraging news would be, okay, if that's the case, then come on, you're probably avoiding surgery there, right? You're avoiding worst case scenario out several weeks, like DeJuan Smoot, who immediately had surgery after the game on Sunday and hurting his wrist. And he is going to be out several weeks. We know that. He's been already placed on injured reserve. So I'm encouraged by that long term for Keon Coleman. But let's also take into account they have this game against the Colts. Then they have next week at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. Then it's a bye week. If the Bills really want to play it safe, considering where they are, yes, I know the one seed is technically in the window, which it is, right? They're two games behind the Chiefs. They play them once. But where they are in the standings at 7-2, having such a stranglehold on the division, you wonder if the thought of, hey, let's err on the side of caution, wait until after the bye week to get a guy like Keon Coleman back maybe, because then you get a full month essentially. I mean, if you think about it, Keon gets hurt on November 3rd. If they wait till this game and next game and then the bye week, he comes back December 1st maybe, Sunday night against San Francisco. That's a full month. That'd be a nice recovery time. But man, it stinks because he's been so good for them lately. And he's just on this great trajectory, it seems like, in his career, in his season. So we'll see what Sean McDermott says about him. Then you have another wide receiver issue. That is Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper also dealing with a wrist injury. It's really weird because it's totally different with him versus Coleman. Coleman has this wrist injury, does not practice at all, but he has no wrap and no brace, but he doesn't practice. Cooper actually has a brace. In fact, it looks like even a small cast maybe if you look at some of the pictures and video tweeted out yesterday down at One Bills Drive. But he did practice, but in a limited fashion. Didn't see him while I was out there catching any passes from Josh Allen this week. So we'll see where all this goes. But that's two wide receivers who I would argue are your two most important wide receivers. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Khalil Shakir obviously is super important. But your outside receivers, right? Obviously your two most important outside receivers. If neither can go, I mean, that puts you at a pretty tough spot. Then you turn to Mac Hollins, who, oh, by the way, was a full participant in the walkthrough estimated practice on Wednesday, but then limited yesterday with his shoulder injury. Now, this goes back to, unless Mac Hollins had some sort of setback during practice, but he's been dealing with a shoulder injury for weeks. I'm going to assume that's not the case. We'll talk with Sean McDermott. I'll specifically ask him about that with Mac Hollins when he comes on the program in a little over a half hour from now. Oh, yeah, by the way, one more. Curtis Samuel, dealing with the pec. Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins, both with red jerseys. Folks, they have four wide receivers listed on the injury report. Three of them have been limited this week. One did not practice. They have elevation possibilities. One would be Jalen Virgil, who's twice been elevated. You get three. One would be Tyrell Shavers, who's been elevated once. You still have KJ Hamler and Deion Kane. I can't imagine they go into this game with four healthy wide receivers, much less three. So I would think that that would be an area where maybe you have to look at this week to figure out what the roster numbers look like. It is incredible that they only have one guy who didn't practice, but because of the position where so many guys are limited and what's happening, you wonder how this is all going to shake out on Sunday. The Bills take on the Indianapolis Colts Sunday at Lucas Oil Stadium at 1 p.m. I have open phone lines right now. Anything you want to talk about, anything you want to chime in on as far as the Bills are concerned, comments, questions, opinions, last night's game, Thursday Night Football, go right ahead. 803-0550. Phone lines are open right now. You give a call, you'll get in before the bottom of the hour. Last night's game. We'll look ahead to the rest of the week in a little while. But I mean, how much did that turn on a moment's notice? Really, it turned on the fumble. When the Bengals fumbled, Chase Brown fumbled the ball midway through the third quarter, essentially. That's when the game turned. And it was 21-7 at that time. The Ravens go down. They get a one-yard run from Derrick Henry to make it 21-14. That was the drive, I believe, where Lamar Jackson did his Houdini act and was unbelievable, towing the sidelines and getting down to the one-yard line running the football. Then after that, they get the ball back, the Ravens, and what in the world were Bengals defenders doing on Wallace's 84-yard touchdown catch and run? It just seemed like they felt that, okay, he's going to go out of bounds. Wait, no, he didn't. Too late. If you're a Bengals fan and you're waking up this morning, you have to feel, even last night going to bed, we've felt this before. We have felt it in Buffalo. Remember the Dallas Monday night game. Remember the Cleveland Monday night game. These are going back to the mid-2000s. Remember 2016, the Seattle Monday night game. Right? We've had Tennessee just a few years ago. Now, the Bills have had a lot of success in prime time since Josh Allen has arrived. So I'm not going to sit here and cry, oh my God, every primetime game, the Bills have these tough losses. That's not the case. But there have been some brutal losses along the way like that. They had one in Baltimore this year where they got just run out of the stadium, basically, right? I mean, Baltimore beat the Bills handily. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these games that you go back and go, how did you lose that game? And if you're a Bengals fan, you have to be thinking that this morning. It was interesting yesterday because I tweeted out yesterday a question. It came from the WGR Twitter. I'm sorry, the Extra Point Twitter page. This is at Extra Point WGR. And I wrote, Bills Mafia, what's the preferred outcome tonight? 2,400 of you voted. Thank you very much. Out of that, 75% said Bengals. 25% said Ravens. I think you could make an argument for either because the pro would be, and listen, just like last week with who do you want to win, Jets or Texans, the same thing happened where we had, and I had in my mentions, a bunch of people screaming about why you cannot want the Bengals to win, and a bunch of people screaming about why you cannot want the Ravens to win. Like, you could look at it both ways. This is it's a big picture outlook for both. There's no doubt about it because they're not division opponents. They're not right on your heels trying to catch you in the division. But what it is I think the aura and the mystique of the Bengals and how many people said you just can't let them in the playoffs. And I get it. I do. I mean, Joe Burrow, look what he did to Buffalo in the playoffs in 2022. I get it. I do think there were extenuating circumstances there, obviously. But yes, it's been a tough matchup for the Bills over the years playing that team. Their receivers are unbelievable. We know that. I mean, holy cow. Jamar Chase last night. 11 catches, 264 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Congratulations if you had Jamar Chase on your fantasy team. Do you? Did you play him against him? You what?
2 weeks ago, I traded him. 4 draft picks.
A dynasty league?
Yes.
Why? Are you like tanking or something?
Yeah. Major tank. But then I won the next week against the guy I traded Chase to, and then this week.
Would it have mattered if he was on your team this week, how much it would matter to your season?
No. You're
okay.
It's yeah.
As long as you were like, man, if that was like costing you, oh my God, now I'm back in the thick of things,
right.
Then you have something to be upset about.
But I do feel bad for everyone else in my league that I traded him to a
person. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure about that, for sure. So if you had Jamar Chase in your fantasy league last night, congratulations. If you played against him, I'm really sorry. He went off. Over 50 points in fantasy. 11 catches, 264 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Either way, though, he kept him in this game. So did Joe Burrow. Burrow throws for 428 and 4 touchdowns. Lamar threw for 4 TDs at 290. Think about that. Burrow threw for 130 yards more, and they both threw for 4 touchdowns. I mean, Lamar also had 33 yards on the ground. So that'll put him over 300 total offense. But last night, looking at the standings now, say let's look what happens now after the standings, okay? Let's put this in perspective. Did not affect anything in the AFC East. The Bills have a clear-cut stranglehold on the AFC East. So much. The Bills have such a stranglehold on the AFC East that their AFC East rivals are rooting for them to win games now. Think about that for a second. That's how far and away the Bills are from the Jets and the Dolphins and even the Patriots, I guess, that those teams are actually rooting for the Bills to win games because they know they can't win the division and they need the Bills to knock down other opponents who they're fighting with for playoff spots. Case in point, this week against the Indianapolis Colts. We've had Boy Green on, Paul Esden. He covers and talks about, I should say, the Jets on his daily podcast, but also he's a radio show host in Syracuse. He's been on the air here. Good guy. Love having him on. And he just bleeds green. That's why his name is called Boy Green. But he's really dialed into the Jets. And he wrote yesterday, he tweeted, and I didn't believe this. I'm like, man, that's true. Because think about how the parity is right now. There's no parity in AFC. It's just the haves and have-nots. Haves and have-nots. He said, if the Bills beat the Colts and the Jets win this week, they're at Arizona to take on the Cardinals, the Jets suddenly have the eighth spot. I mean, think about that for a second. The Jets, if they win, they could be 4-6 and in the eighth spot. I guess one game under 500 and not too hard to think about, but that's because the Colts would then go to 4-6. They'd be 4-6. The Bengals are 4-6. You'd have this whole group of teams at 4-6, and they'd be tied right there for the A spot, however the tiebreakers shake out. But the point I'm making is Jets fans are rooting for the Bills to win to make that happen. That's how big of a lead the Bills have. Amazing. Okay, where does Cincinnati fall? If Cincinnati had won that game last night, they'd be 5-5, and they'd be in the eighth spot, a half game out of the Denver Broncos, who would have to still play their game this week. They'd be right there. But because of it, now they go to the 9. They're 4-6. They are now rooting for the Bills to beat the Colts. And they'll be looking at the Chiefs to beat the Broncos this week because now these teams are all fighting for playoff spots. How does it affect the top of the conference? Well, look, right now, the Bills have the 2 seed at 7-2. The Ravens, even with the win last night, don't even have a top 4 seed because they are not the division leader in the AFC North. The division leaders get all 4 of the top 4 seeds. Pittsburgh is sitting there at 6-2. The Pittsburgh Steelers have the division lead in the AFC North. They've yet to play a division game. They're 6-2. They're a game ahead of the Ravens at 7-3. And they still have to play this week. A game and a half, I guess, or whatever, half game, whatever, however you want to look at it. The Ravens have not had their bye yet. That comes later. The Ravens have a pretty tough schedule coming up. The Steelers have a pretty tough schedule coming up. It's going to be interesting. But if you look at right now, you know what the playoff matchups will be in the first round? Check this out. Can we just stop the count now? Can we do it? Can we end the season and have the playoffs start now? Because right now, the Broncos would come to Buffalo in round one. Okay? The Chargers would go to the Steelers. And the Ravens would go to the Texans, and one of them would be knocked out. Okay? That's how it would look right now. Now, think about it this way, too. All you'd need, you could get, well, if the Chargers then upset the Steelers, the Chargers would then come here for the divisional round. I think this is the best setup right now that I'm looking at of all kind of the realistic possibilities we're in, where it is right now. This would be the best kind of look at it for the Bills from the 2 seed. The Ravens, though, I mean, I still don't know if I trust him. Kyle Hamilton's out. How long? I don't know. Sprained ankle, didn't return last night. The Bengals did a great job on their offense until the middle of the third quarter, and then they obviously made some mistakes, and the Ravens had some big plays and made them pay. I mean, the Ravens are going to lose some more games, I think, right? They have the Steelers, the Chargers, the Eagles, the Steelers, the Texans, the Browns at the end. Interesting stuff. All right, 803-0550. Here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Let's go to Curtis in Niagara Falls to start us off. We have open phone lines as well. Go ahead, Curtis.
Hey, good morning, Sal. It's been a while. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks. You too.
All right. I was on hold listening to standing things, but I'll get to in a second. But I was just when you started talking about the gang last night, Lamar, don't sometimes he look like the camp counselor playing with the kids?
It's amazing, right?
Oh God, yes.
You know what's funny is, too, if you go back early in the game, they said, you know, he's run a lot less lately, and he might be dealing with something. And then all of a sudden, all it takes is one run to go, yeah, it doesn't matter. He's Lamar Jackson.
Right. And sometimes it's like he's almost like a cheat code, you know? But what you were talking about just now about the standings, I'm glad, like, Baltimore has lost some because of the head-to-head situation.
Yep.
And we can hold the two. And, like, I was just talking to some neighbors the other day about the Chiefs. I said, you know, and this sounds weird compared to, like, the drought years. I said, yeah, we'll beat the Chiefs in regular season. You know, and it's just we got to win these games when they count in January. We have to. We have the team.
You know, in 2 weeks, now next week you can call me. We can talk about this because they're playing them. Obviously, it's not this week, but I've been thinking about this, Curtis, and here's what it comes down to for me is the Bills are almost in, with the fan base, almost a no-win situation against the Chiefs when they play them, because if they win, it's yeah, great, go do it in January. If you lose, it's, yep, here we go, Chiefs own the conference. There's almost no way around it. And I get it, because you do have to beat them in January, or at least have someone else knock them off before you get there.
Yeah, you know, but it's like with this, like I'm an old school Dolphin hater. I lived through the whole 70 thing. Then there was a thing with the Patriots. Yeah, it's anticlimactic with the perfect game, but I would have preferred if Brady was still there. You know?
Yeah, I get it.
So yes, of course I would love somebody else to beat the Chiefs, but it would be so sweet if we knocked them out the playoffs. It would, because I remember back before the season, I'm the 13-4. You know, cold and frozen winds of Delaware Avenue in the parade.
You got it. I got it all written down here, Curtis. I got it all written down. I was looking at it the other day, buddy.
Yeah, we got to get past the Chiefs. And, like, of course I hope we slam them, you know, but in the Brexit. But it's just getting to, they can have another spot, a patch of missing hair in my head next to the Patriots and Dolphins.
Yeah, listen, man, you'd love to beat them, but the prospect of playing them, if you could tell me you'd get knock them out, go right ahead. Then you play somebody else.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? No doubt about it.
Delaware Avenue will be Delaware Avenue.
You got it, Curtis. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for the phone call. Have a great weekend.
Okay, Sal. You too.
Bye. All right. Yeah, thank you. 803-0550. The Bills, he brought up the record. Curtis did. He predicted. He called in. I did the show right before the season. I said, call your shot. Curtis called in, said 13-4. Parade down Delaware Avenue. I love it. Like, thinking about the vibes of it. But 13-4, it seemed like, what are you doing, dude? 13-4. This team is not going 13-4. Think about all the changes, stepping back, retooling, transition year, 13-4. Folks, they could go 13-4. Now, they have some tough games coming up. The Bills do. And even some games that didn't look as tough a few weeks ago now look a lot tougher. Early, when the schedule comes out, you're like, ooh, Niners, Rams, yeah, it's going to be tough. And then season starts to go, and you're like, yeah, Niners and Rams not looking as tough. Now, ooh, Niners, Rams, looking tough, right? I mean, they still have the Chiefs, the Niners, the Rams, the Lions. They do get the Patriots twice. They do get the Jets again. Who knows what they are late in the season. This team does have a look at 13-4. It's pretty remarkable. I went back and looked. Tweeted this out the other day. I said, how many times the Bills really started even 8-2? Like, that's a remarkable record to start 10 games. In the NFL, you win 8 of your first 10 games in any season. I don't care what team you are. That's remarkable. That's great. It's not happened in 31 years, folks. Last time the Bills started a season 8-2, which they have a chance to do this weekend, 31 years ago, 1993, their last Super Bowl year. They've started 7-3 a bunch of times, including 3 of the last 5 years. 8-2, very, very rare. A chance to do it against the Colts this weekend. Rick in Hamburg. Hi, Rick. Go ahead. You're on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey, Sal Capaccio. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
I was telling your guy, I rewatched a lot of the game and some of the All-22 guys posted. I was wondering, our defensive interior linemen do not complain about holding enough. I know nobody wants to be a crybaby or nothing like that, but I'm watching some of these guys in some of these games raise their hands in the air and cry about it, and the ref will throw the flag. Our guys just don't complain about it that much.
Yeah, I don't know if the complaining gets you the flag, but certainly if you draw attention to it, maybe they're looking. I will agree with you, Rick, that last week I thought Ed Oliver was held numerous times and nothing was called, and then you had the phantom call on Deion Dawkins the other way.
Oh my God! I watched the All 22 on that.
Yeah.
That was one of the greatest blocks I ever saw by an offensive lineman.
Yeah, it was great, and I appreciate that. And even Brian Baldinger pointed that out. Should not have been a penalty. Thanks a lot, Rick. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. One more call before the break. Let's go to Justin in Oneonta. What's up, Justin?
Hey, Sal. How we doing, bud?
Good, thanks.
I kind of got on a bit of a soapbox this morning watching some of the big heads talk on ESPN about how great Lamar Jackson is and how all this is going on. And it's like, well, yeah, he's got Derrick frickin' Henry in the backfield, right? Like, he's going to look good. You have to let him be able to do whatever Lamar's going to do. And it's not a knock on, like, Lamar as an athlete. But I think, like, this week, Josh has to show that he's just as good of an athlete, put this team in its place, show that the Buffalo Bills are for real, and kind of, like, just because everyone says we don't beat these great teams or big teams. Like, this is a playoff team. Let's put them in their place. Let's show that Josh can go for 3 or 4 touchdowns. And just kind of put to bed that, like, the Bills are this makeshift team that doesn't belong where they are.
All right. Listen, I'd love for that to happen. And for Josh, we know that he's played differently this year. Not as much downfield, but also very, very efficient. He's had some big games. It's been a while. When's the last time Josh Allen threw for 400 yards? I know that's high, you know, it's lofty expectation there. I'm not, you know, telling you that 400 yards is easy. Let me just get the last time. Here we go. Last time he... Actually, he hasn't thrown for Josh Allen has not thrown for 300 yards this year. Oh, yeah, he did. I'm sorry. A few weeks ago against Tennessee. That's right. A good defense. 323. That's his only game. You got to go back. Oh, you know what? He actually hasn't thrown for 400 in a couple years. Last time was against the Steelers. 38-3. Bills beat the Steelers here. Oh, yeah, that's that Gabe Davis long 99-yard touchdown. And again, I'm not saying, oh, my God, go out there and you need to throw for 400 yards. But just some game like that to just cement it, right? Like, Lamar's out here throwing and doing the things he's doing, and now he's the NFL MVP favorite this morning. Josh can take that back with a big, big game, but just keep being efficient, keep throwing touchdowns, not interceptions, score points, win the game. That's what you got to do. And if the Bills can go 13-4 or something like that, like we talked earlier, I think Josh has a serious look at it. But, man, Lamar is absolutely tremendous. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. We will be back in a snap. It's brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott at 10:45.
And now it's Paterka, middle of the ice, scores! Tage Thompson! That was a rocket of a shot, 89.7 miles per hour, and it puts Buffalo up 3-0 here in the second period.
I mean, from there, the Sabres just kept rolling 6-1 over the New York Rangers last night on a Buffalo Football Friday. We're looking back to a Buffalo Sabres hockey Thursday night that was outstanding. 6-1 over the New York Rangers. They chase one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, Shesterkin, after 5 goals. Jonathan Quick comes in, gives up another one. Sabres win 6-1. In this game, by the way, Sabres had, what did I read? 11 forwards had points. Is that the way I read it?
Every single forward had points.
Every single forward had at least 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Before the last goal, I think they had 15 different players with 1 point, but no one had two. Or 14 with a point, and no one had two. And I was wondering what the record would be for the most number of players that have 1 point in a game and not with two. Because that's insane, right? And then the last goal happened, and Benson actually gets the goal, so he has 2 points on the night.
And Quinn also had the assist.
Thank you. So he also had 2 points. He had 2 assists. Thank you. Really nice night last night for the Buffalo Sabres. We'll talk with Brian Koziol coming up at the top of the hour. We'll look ahead to the weekend. The Sabres have a game on Saturday, tomorrow, at 1 p.m. Pregame here on WGR and the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network at 12 p.m. And then, of course, again on Monday, it's Veterans Day, and the Sabres are playing Monday afternoon. We're going to take one phone call here, and then we'll take another quick timeout before Sean McDermott comes aboard. Michael in Atlanta. Go ahead, Mike. What's up?
Hey, Sal. Hey, I wonder if you could leave me on so I could actually hear your response. I know sometimes you have to cut the call to get to the next one, but I can't get my internet. Something's wrong with that on my laptop, so I don't have your radio station on there. Okay, so anyhow, a couple things real quick. With the problems the Bills have had against the run, Just wanted to get your feelings about what they can do to address that, and if you think Jordan Phillips might be able to help.
So the problem against the run is the Bills are kind of designed, Mike, to stop the pass and not the run. It doesn't mean they just want teams to run all over them. It's not what I'm saying. But the Bills have constructed a team and said, look, you're not going to throw all over us. You're not going to throw over the top of us. We're going to have a team that keeps our safeties high, which less guys down low. We're going to have lighter, more athletic linebackers and a penetrating defensive line. Well, what's going to happen then is you're going to be susceptible to bigger teams who want to pound at you and run the football. They can do things with their roster to try and mitigate that, but then you're taking guys off the field, like, let's say, Taron Johnson, who you don't want to take off the field. Sometimes it could be a catch-22. Jordan Phillips, sure, he might be able to help, but he's actually more of a penetrating defensive lineman. That's really more of what he is. He's not a run-stuffing guy. He's not a plugger. To me, a guy like Ilianku, who played well last week, you need more, a couple more guys like that, and Dwayne Carter when he comes back from IR.
Right, okay. And the other thing I want to talk about, thanks for answering that, and I don't want to get into conspiracy theories and all that, but I think that this, some of these horrible calls and non-calls in the officiating this year, not just with Buffalo. It's all over the league. It happened last night. It's been happening frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to eliminate any thought out there that people might be thinking there are these officials, that they have friends or family betting on the games, because sometimes these calls, like in the Dolphins games, you know, with that horrible call against Deion Dawkins that robs Bill of 4 points, a horrible call for against Taylor Rapp when it should have been the other way. I mean, very blatantly obvious that gave Miami 3, that they got a field goal. So that could have been a 10-point win. So within the betting realm, you know, you bet on the Dolphins, you won. So to eliminate any of that, is there any way that this league could ever implement, when it's something that's so blatantly obvious, on a call or a non-call, that there could ever be a review process like they have on a touchdown and on a scoring drive or whatever, that should be reviewed?
If we're going to be reviewing holding plays, you're going to be here all day. Because you could say blatantly obvious, that's subjective, right? So it's not going to happen. I mean, I don't want it to happen. I guess you could get to maybe hit to the head, face mask last night, maybe. But they tried this 1 year with pass interference, Michael, and it was a disaster.
So what's the answer? Just we have to live with these horrible calls?
Yes, you have to live with horrible calls like you have to live with horrible plays by the players on the field the exact same way. I agree. Yes, that's it. That's the answer.
It's very frustrating.
Okay, I know. So I get it.
It's honest. I know. You're being honest about it.
Just they're human beings. They're going to make bad calls, and you hope the answer is that they need to be better. That's the answer, right? Mike, I wish there was a better answer for that, buddy.
Okay, man. Well, I do appreciate you as always.
You got it, Michael. Thank you for the phone call. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me on the other side to talk about the injuries that are right now, the injury reports. We'll get a report on that as we look ahead to Sunday's game and the Indianapolis Colts. We will have Bills head coach Sean McDermott when he is able to phone us here in just a little while, and then we'll get you your Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal Capaccio here with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. And of course, all of our Buffalo Football Friday is brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Want to get connected with our fans here? It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Just had somebody tweet me a little while ago. This is Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, who writes in at Sal Sports, by the way. I understand your point around not reviewing penalties, but I think the Sky Judge or New York or someone should be able to phone in and fix egregious mistakes. Remember the black coats that came in the overturned fumble in the Texans? Yes, I do. They should jump in when needed. Thank you, Aaron. I responded to you, but I'll say publicly to everybody here, I get it, but that's a rule, not a judgment penalty. That's a specific rule that they said, oh, that's not what they interpreted the rule a certain way, whatever was intended there. I get it. The point is, there may be, what's the old saying? There's a hold on every play in the NFL, right? There may be a hold on every play. Are you going to review every play? Well, that's egregious. Who's to determine what's egregious and what's not? The league tried this with obvious, quote-unquote, pass interference penalties. It was a disaster, and nothing got overturned. It just took too long. It was disjointed. It never worked. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it for holding calls. They shouldn't do it for holding calls. You need people to be better at their job is what you need. But I would also tell you all the time, nobody's perfect. We expect officials to be perfect. They're not. At least they have some help in some regard. They have to be better than what they have been. When you miss the obvious face mask in the Vikings game a few weeks ago, you miss the obvious two face masks, two last night, by the way, against Joe Burrow, including on the two-point conversion. They had the hold in the end zone or right at the goal line on the two-point conversion. Those are the ones that get you frustrated. I'm with all of you. I understand all that. But players make mistakes and coaches make mistakes. And officials are going to make mistakes. That's the way sports are. They've been that way since we were all little kids growing up. They're still that way. I coach my son's little league team and go watch them play other games, and officials make calls and bad calls. And then you get the idiot parents who get on people and kids and volunteers who let them know about it. But the point is, they're not perfect. You know what else happens in the same game? My son makes a mistake, or your son or your daughter makes a mistake. Same thing happens at the professional level. Josh Allen's not perfect. Players make mistakes. Coaches make bad calls. Officials are going to do that too. You have to live with it. It's unfortunate because they seem to be piling up, and really in a situation like last night, critical moments of the game. And here we are again talking about officials. And it sucks that we're talking about officials and them being kind of the determining factor in any sort of the game, any sort of determining factor in the game. I get it. I agree. But there's no right answer there other than being better at your job. And people have said, well, give them more training and they more reps because they're not full time. And there's, you know, some of these guys are lawyers or doctors or whatever. I understand all that. I don't know how you can simulate games when there's not games being played except going to practice every single day. I guess you could do that to get more reps. But they know the rules. They know what they're looking at. Most of these guys have been officiating quite a long time. They just need to be better. What I don't like is the notion, and there was actually a good debate last night on the Thursday Night Football Amazon Prime broadcast after the game about, in that situation, should you throw it? Fitz actually, believe it or not, Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of defended the officials for not throwing the flag on the final play, the two-pointer, and like, well, did it really matter there? Well, yeah, but he hit him in the face mask. That's a rule. They protect quarterbacks all the time. If a quarterback gets hit in the head, if a quarterback gets hit in the face, it's called a penalty in this league, like, all the time. Even ones that they just glance it and graze it. Joe Burrow, he didn't even complain. I can't believe Burrow didn't look at the official and go, dude, what are you looking at? Joe Burrow gets hit in the face on a two-point conversion play, and they don't call it. I mean, yeah, you should call that. I disagreed with Fitz on that. I thought it was interesting that he was a guy that was kind of defending that in that situation. He also kind of defended the non-call on the hold because Gesicki's getting held right around, what, the left hash, let's say, and the ball's thrown to the right hash, and it didn't matter, and he didn't even look that way. I think something like that, Fitz said. Yeah, I don't agree with all that. I mean, those are penalties. You have to call them. And they were big penalties in the game. No doubt. 803-0550 if you want to jump on board. We are awaiting Bills head coach Sean McDermott to give us a call here. Last night, the Thursday night football game and week number 10. I can't believe we're in week 10 already, right? Season flies by, doesn't it? Starts off with the Ravens beating the Bengals 35-34. Excellent game. We have also this week a Munich game. Game being played in Munich. That's going to be the Giants at the Panthers. That's a 9:30 Eastern time start. So you wake up in the morning, Sunday morning, you're like, yep, getting ready for Bills Colts. Here we go. Turn it on. Yeah. Ooh, there's another early game. We've had some of these early games. Who is it? Oh, it's Giants Panthers. Okay, now I will say, Bryce Young played a little better last week. In fact, he played enough better that it got the other coach fired. The Saints fired Dennis Allen after they lost 23-22 to the Carolina Panthers last week. The Panthers have been terrible this year, but they beat the Saints, who started off 2-0 and were ahead on all these power rankings and all these other metrics after 2 weeks. And then suddenly they lose 7 games in a row and they fire their head coach. Alvin Kamara ran for 155 yards. Didn't matter. Panthers wound up winning the game. By the way, if you look at the stats in this game, the Panthers got dominated. And they didn't even force a turnover. I'm not sure what happened here. What You got to look at it. Anyway, the point I'm making is Panthers, Giants, at least it's football, right? That's the motto for this game, 2-7. At least it's football in the morning, something that you can watch. Oh, here's one I had on my notes I wanted to bring up today. Josh, did you realize until we had our discussion this morning on with Jeremy and Joe that Lucas Oil Stadium is a retractable roof? Be honest.
I didn't know that.
Did you know that?
No, I did not. It looks like it could never be opened.
Right.
Like it just looks like a roof.
It is a retractable roof. They could actually have it open. But it's not. And sometimes they have it open. Sometimes they don't. Generally, it's not. I doubt it will be open this weekend. There's supposed to be rain on Sunday. But yeah, it's a retractable roof. And if you look at the building, the way it's shaped, you wouldn't think that. All right, we're going to get to Bills head coach Sean McDermott right now here on the Wester Hotline as he joins us for his weekly radio appearance.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
And Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me right now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, Coach. Hope you had a great week and having a great Friday morning.
Good morning. Yeah, we are. We're having a good week and a good Friday morning to this point.
Okay, Coach. So obviously, we'll start off with the injury report. You have 19 players on the list. Only one didn't practice this week. That's Keon Coleman. Several guys limited. Anybody you know right now will not be playing in this game on Sunday.
Right, so Keon will be ruled out, and then Reggie Gilliam and Amari will both be limited today, and we'll see where that goes through the weekend here.
Okay, on Amari, Coach, obviously he missed a game. He's been limited this week. Just kind of what's your feel of how he's progressed through this and what you're looking at, what he needs to do maybe to show you that he'd be available to play?
Well, to be honest with you, I just listen to what our trainer says. Mm-hmm. When he gives me the information, when he tells me, he gives me the green light, that's when he's playing. And to this point, we haven't had that. And, you know, since he's gone down with the injury. And so we'll see where it goes. You know, obviously, he's a really good player. And so he's a good player for us. So, but, you know, all the while, somebody else has to step up and fill in for both Keon at this case and if Amari can't go.
Mac Hollins went from full to limited, Coach. Just is there anything there with that, or is this just kind of the way the week went, the way you guys managed him?
Yeah, I mean, he's dealing with some shoulder soreness there. You know, he's had it a little bit over the last 3-4 weeks here, and so sometimes it flares up more than others.
Are you looking at your numbers at wide receiver? What's the concern level with how these guys are, their bodies at this point of the year, getting banged up, the number of guys on the injured list? As you said, guys have to step up. What's your concern level at that position right now?
Well, you know, when you have the injuries that we do have, it is concerning. You know, we've been dealing, like I said, everyone has injuries. We've been dealing with it most of our season here, and you do the best that you can, and you control what you can control at this point.
All right, Coach, let's talk about the guys when you do have to elevate somebody, how that works. Just a question for you, just kind of an operational standpoint. Do you kind of think early in the week and tell a player, hey, you're going to be up this week and they have to kind of get into the game plan? Or is that something you determine later in the week after you kind of know what's happening? Maybe you even have guys compete to see who's going to be up. I think fans sometimes wonder how all that works at the end of the week, how you determine that.
Yeah, it's you know, you're always trying to be honest and transparent. I think that's important, number one. To your point, there is some, you know, inconsistency at times because you're trying to be honest, and then another player, you know, so the said player here is going to be inactive, and then another player gets hurt during the week, and then all of a sudden that player that you initially thought was going to be inactive is back active again. I mean, that happens numerous times throughout the course of a season, and then sometimes the other way as well, where mm-hmm. a player you don't think is going to be available is available, and then the player who thought they were going to be up is actually down for the game. So it is literally day to day and sometimes minute to minute, and Not an easy thing to navigate, but you try. I think the best approach is just to be transparent and honest.
Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson return. I know you were asked about them the other day. How have they fit in so far, and is there a chance we could see both of them play on Sunday?
There is a chance. There's a good chance. We'll see again what their pitch count is because they haven't been playing all that much at their previous teams to this point in the season. So it'll be an interesting rhythm to see what we can get established there, and trying to put each player in the best position with the right amount of reps for each of those guys.
Sean, one more thing on Keon, I forgot to ask you. Is there any concern still on your part that it could be longer term, or is this still something you're evaluating on a day to day or into next week basis?
Well, I think it's a week to week deal, and maybe beyond. I don't know. It's again. I'm listening to our training staff. That's all I know at this point.
Okay. Let's get to Tyler Bass his week. He was named Special Teams Player of the Week after the inconsistencies, bringing in a kicker. For him to have that kick last week obviously meant a lot, but how about his response at practice this week and seeing his teammates respond to him and the week that he had?
Yeah, he's been having a good week. He's been focused, doing what he does, and he just felt good for him, right, to be able to get that kick and under his belt. And, listen, it's a all of us, right, and anybody who says differently is probably not being real. It's all confidence, right? And there's a lot of that goes on and into this, even for professional football players.
Sean, you released the team released Mike Edwards this week. You're down to four active safeties, but one is also your backup nickel cornerback. That would be Cam Lewis. Where are you at with that position right now, and how you feel about that group and the numbers right now that you have?
Well, no, I think with any situation, you want the best players to play, and Mike came in unfortunately and was injured in the spring, and then again in training camp, so never really got a chance to see what he could do, and so you have Cam Lewis, you have DeMar, you have Cole Bishop, Taylor Rapp, and so you've got some guys there that are all contributing, whether it be special teams or in a primary role. Cam plays our dime position from time to time, and so there's some good things going on there. Does it make it tough sometimes to handle more than one position for some of these guys? Absolutely it does, but we certainly appreciate them and their position flexibility, and we'll see where it goes in the future here for us.
Speaking of special teams, before we get to the Colts, I want to talk about Brandon Codrington, a young man that you guys traded for. I did some numbers here, Coach. He's fifth in the NFL in punt return, average yards, 11.9 in return. But your team is number one in the league in average drive start, just over the 33-yard line. Can you just kind of get into a little bit about him and his contribution, how much that's helped you guys this year?
Yeah, he's been a good pickup for us. With his traits, and he's a young player, don't get me wrong, but he's very conscientious, very hardworking, understands the game, and it's having said all that, it's bringing a young player up from the ground up in this league, and I thought the decision he made last week was a sign of growth, where the ball had bounced, took a good healthy bounce. He was planning on letting it just die, and then it took a good healthy bounce. He ran up, made a great decision, and got another 15 so yards off of it. So that to me is a sign of a young player growing and developing.
All right, your team, your opponent this week, I should say, the Indianapolis Colts, a veteran quarterback who's seen everything in this league, a running back who you've seen up close, obviously, put up some numbers the last time you guys played. What are the challenges that these two individuals and that group overall on the other side of the ball bring?
Yeah, it's a line of scrimmage game, Sal. It is every week, but in particular this week. We've got to make sure we establish a line of scrimmage on the offensive side and make sure that, defensively, that we play really well at the line of scrimmage and good run fundamentals. So it's going to be a big challenge against a team that has played extremely well at home, and their losses, they've lost, by 8 points or less. So a team that's used to playing complete full games, and we have to continue to prepare that way.
And on the other side of the ball, it feels like, I'm looking at some of the numbers, they're pretty much a lot like you guys, a little bend but don't break. They buckle down in the red zone. Zaire Franklin, it seems like he's all over the field. What about on that side of the ball and some of the challenges they present for you guys to have to kind of grind your way?
Yeah, Zaire's a good player. He actually went to the same high school that I did outside of Philadelphia there. So,
and he's a Syracuse guy, Coach. Come on.
And accused guys.
There you go.
Give him a little shout out, right? Yeah. But no, we respect his game, and you know, defensively, as you mentioned, they play hard, they play fast. They're led by their defensive front, with a few good players, really good players up front, and then they're very active in the back end, and so it'll be a big challenge for us, and we've got to be disciplined, smart, and play a complete game.
Thanks for the time today, Coach. Safe travels to Indianapolis. Good luck on Sunday. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. A lot to get to on the injury front, and I thought, not great when I asked him about Keon Coleman long-term. He said it's going to be probably a week-to-week, could be beyond. Don't know exactly what that means, but we'll find out as we go here with Keon Coleman not playing this week for the Buffalo Bills against the Indianapolis Colts. Will Amari Cooper play? We'll find out. Could he be listed as doubtful, questionable? We'll find out a little bit later when the official injury report comes out on a Friday. In the meantime, we'll take a timeout here. We are late to the break. Brian Koziol joins me after this timeout to give a little Sabres vibe check after last night's 6-1 win over the Rangers. And obviously, I have to get to what's going to happen this weekend in the NFL week number 10. We'll do all that in Patrick Hammer at 11:30 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Dylan Cousins double-teamed as he brings it up near the point. Sabres from right to left. Cousins again scores! That's Dylan Cousins that you've been looking for, and so is he. What a great shot to make it 2-0 here in the second period.
Sabres 6-1 over the Rangers last night. Just want to rewind real quick before I get to Brian Koziol. Sean McDermott just joined me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He's now going to meet with the rest of the local Buffalo media down at One Bills Drive. Of course, injuries and concerns. Keon Coleman, when I revisited and asked afterwards, hey, is this something long-term you're still thinking about? Is it decide week to week next week? He did call it. He did say week to week. He said maybe beyond. I don't really know what that means. Not very promising to hear that. Would it be a stunner if he got placed on IR after hearing that? No, but I mean, you have no brace or wrap or anything yesterday. So Saturday, 4 p.m. is kind of, you know, the witching hour there. If you hear that Keon Coleman got placed on IR, it would be by then. If not, then that means they're confident that he might be able to come back before the required four games they'd have to miss. In the meantime, Amari Cooper also doesn't sound super promising. He's going to be limited today, and he said, I just go by what the trainers tell me. And maybe if he can't go, others have to step up. The other thing I'll say about this is, man, they are so banged up at wide receiver right now, considering all this. And the fact that he said, it's a line of scrimmage game. You know what I think? The Bills are running the ball like 40 times on Sunday. I think that's what we're going to be looking at here on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. By the way, the Colts aren't that great of a rush defense, numbers-wise, so might be beneficial to the Bills to do that. Sabres with a big win last night, 6-1 over the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden, a place I've actually had quite a bit of success, believe it or not, over the last several years, even throughout, you know, these slumping times. Let's get right out to the Western Hotline and talk with Brian Koziol, who joins me right now, Sabres pre- and post-game host. Boy, that was fun last night. Was it, Brian? Wasn't it, Brian?
Holy cow, yes, it was. I mean, the goals to start the periods are a little bit more frequent now. Darlene scores just 26 seconds into the game. And then you end up with six different scorers and all 12 forwards on the score sheet, only the second time that's ever happened in team history, and against a really good team. So, yeah, it all added up to a nice 6-1 win for them.
And then, obviously, getting contributions from everyone was really the key. And this happened the other night, too. I mean, they've won their last two games, I think, 11-2, right? It was 5-1 the other night, now 6-1 last night. And really getting contributions from around the roster has really been a key factor.
Lindy Ruff, I'll use his line from last night. He said, it's a four-line game.
Yep.
And he said, when all four lines are contributing, he goes, that's when we're going to win. And, you know, I think last night, again, was another example of what we've seen with the bottom six and the new additions, especially what we've been seeing from Jason Zucker lately, that what Kevin Adams did to rebuild lines 3 and 4 on this team, I think is worth crediting. I think he's done a really, really nice job. Not only are they harder to play against, but where the Sabres in years past, we've always sat here and analyzed, you know, how come the Bruins are getting so many goals from their fourth line? How come these other good teams are getting contributions from their other, you know, non-stars? Well, the Sabres are getting point production from their third and their fourth line guys. And, you know, even some highlight reel goals last night. Mallenstein setting up Lafferty mm-hmm. for his first as a Saber. Jason Zucker now has 11 points in his last 11 games. So, yes, the top line is dominating. And, you know, Tage Thompson's on pace for 53 goals right now. But these games, they've been putting up the goals that you mentioned, 5 and 6, because they're also getting contributions elsewhere, including lines 3 and 4.
And the power play has kind of come to life a little bit here. And I have to go back and look. Maybe last night it wasn't. What were the numbers last night? Maybe they didn't have as much success last night. Here we go. Okay, one for four.
One of three last night, maybe, right?
It was 1 of 4 overall. I think they scored. They might have scored right after a power play had expired. But it has been much more successful as of late, obviously.
For sure. And, you know, I think what we're seeing is better movement, still that net presence they're looking for, the more simpler play. They're getting it into the zone better. We know for the first 3 weeks of the season, Sal, they were having that drop pass and then that issue of bringing it in where teams were just standing them up on the line. Mm-hmm. They've changed it up in terms of making it a little bit more unpredictable of how they're entering the zone. So I think that's really helped. And Darlene said, look, we're getting the puck in and getting on the forecheck instantly, and that's how they're winning battles. So that placement of where they put the puck in to get on the forecheck has resulted in them winning battles, getting possession in the offensive zone, which has ultimately led to some goals. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds easy, it sounds simple, but these players say it all the time that, hey, when we stick to it, it works, which, again, can be extremely frustrating because you probably are sitting there saying, well, why does – if they know it works, why aren't they doing it more often? Well, that's the golden question. If we had an answer to that, well – then the Sabres drought would have been gone a long time ago.
This is amazing. I'm looking up right now, Brian, the power play percentage leaders in the league and overall for teams. The Sabres have actually climbed up to 28th. I say that because they had not had a power play goal for so long, and now they're 28th. But here are the teams, 26 through 32. This is amazing. Think of these names. This is the worst power plays in the league now. Here we go. Maple Leafs, Oilers, Sabres, Islanders, Bruins, Blues, and Capitals. What?
Yes, the best player in the league is on that list with Edmonton. Alex Ovechkin is red hot. He's a staple of that power play, that one-time shot. The Bruins, we know, they're loaded on the power play. Pastrnak, Marchand, you're right. So it's not just instantly, well, if you're a good team, you have a good power play. The Sabres have been struggling with it for sure, but over the last 2 weeks, they've been in the top 10 in the NHL in their percentage, so you've got to think maybe, hey, they're maybe finding the light here at what has been a really dark time for them. And no surprise, the points are coming with it, because when you can score 5-on-5, they've done a pretty good job 5-on-5, even through the losses. Now you're able to contribute on special teams. That's what's resulting in wins.
I believe Tage Thompson now leads the league with 9 5-on-5 goals this year. You mentioned 53 pace, but the 5-on-5 is really starting to open up. Dylan Cousins scores again last night. Good to get him going again. But, Brian, how about the lineup changes and guys sitting in the press box watching? It seems like this has, whatever the formula is, however you want to approach it, the guy's sitting or the guy's playing, it's working right now, at least in the short term, for Lindy.
Absolutely. And that was what? The one huge message we heard from the players last year, they needed more accountability.
Yep.
Don Granato did not believe in taking away ice time if guys were making mistakes. He thought it was done maybe through different variety of methods, whether it was teaching, addressing it at practice, one-on-one session, all that sort of thing. Lindy has been basically, you know, very blunt about it. Like, you're not going to play if you don't play up to the standard that I think you're capable of. And that's exactly what he said with Joakim Haru and Samuelson. Like, you guys can be better. You know you can be better. I've seen it from you. You're not doing it. I thought there was a hesitation there. Maybe bench Samuelson because he does wear an A. That is gone, which I think sends a great message to the team. Look, even if you wear a letter, or even if you have a big contract, or even if you've been with this organization for a while, everyone is fair game to lose their ice time. So I think that's a really, really good message. No surprise that he went back with the same lineup after they played so well against Ottawa. And I'm going to guess for tomorrow, mm-hmm. we are likely not going to see any lineup changes. Jacob Bryson has been really, really good, I think, in these last two games. Dennis Gilbert has been given good energy. Last night, leading the team in block shots, tied for second with hits. So he's doing what he does well, and I would expect that Lindy's going to keep those two out right now until we see a major change back there on the blue line.
What about in goal? You expect something to change there? I would expect one of these two games, Levi, to get, right? Saturday and Monday, both afternoon games?
Yeah, I got to think right now, unless something changes in terms of his fatigue level, that he's going to go back to Lukanen.
Mm-hmm.
Last year when he played his best, it was when he was playing 4 out of 5 games in a row. Not a very long trip to come from New York City to come back to Buffalo, so it's not like they got in at 3 a.m. or anything like that. So I think probably the thought would be to come back with Lukanen. I do think you're right. I think probably you got to figure out where do you get this Levi game in there. They do have games spaced out, though, all next week. They play Monday, then they don't play again until Thursday, then they don't play again until Saturday. So if you want to ride the hot hand in Lukanen, if he stays hot, the door is open to have that discussion.
All right, buddy. I feel like we haven't talked in a long time. How was your Halloween last week?
Very, very good. It was nice to hand out candy on a night where I didn't have to be freezing, open up the door for everybody. So that was really nice. It was beautiful.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so tomorrow, Sabres pregame, obviously, noon, right? We'll have Sports Talk Saturday, Sabres pregame at noon. Then we'll have Dan and Rob on the call, of course. Calgary Flames come to town. A team that, this is Dennis Gilbert's old team, by the way, the newcomer to the Sabres who's from Buffalo.
That's right. And the Flames played in Boston last night. They lost in overtime, able to pick up a point. They're doing all right in terms of, you know, points-wise, 7-5-2, their record coming in. So they seem to be playing pretty well with themselves. But, again, a winnable game. The stretch here for the Sabres, you're playing then a Montreal team who's near the bottom of the standings. You're home again for St. Louis, again, around a 500 club. So, and then they had really good success going out west. They've got next week the Sharks and the Ducks and the Kings. So, you know, the opportunity there is there. I think despite the fact that they started Sal in Prague and all that goes with
that, yep.
I think the first 2 months, minus that trip, I think the schedule's been about as friendly as you could have asked. There's space in between games. There's a ton of home games.
Yeah.
We haven't even had like this gauntlet of, oh my goodness, you're facing this team and this team and this team. But look, maybe the best two teams they've played, maybe the best three teams they've played. Florida, they beat. Dallas, they beat. The Rangers, they beat. Now they split with Florida, but 3 out of 4 against the league's best there. It seems to be the pattern is it doesn't even matter if they're playing a, quote, tough opponent or an easy opponent. If the Sabres play their game, they're having success. If they get off their game, which we also know we've seen that too, then they lose.
Yeah, Devils pretty good too, right? I mean, they open up with them in Europe, and you know we see what they're doing right now. Brian, let you get back to work and do what you're doing. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we're talking next week about a nice winning streak here for the Buffalo Sabres, buddy.
Yeah, they won 3 in a row, lost 3 in a row. They'll be going for 3 in a row wins-wise tomorrow against Calgary.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. Thanks.
All right, Sal, thanks.
All right, you got it. Brian Colesio right there on the West Her Hotline. Yeah, looking at the Sabres numbers, Tage, 9 goals. Yeah, was he having a power play here? Even Drake, he has 4. Somebody, I thought I read he was tied for 5-on-5 goals, but now I'm reading that he has power. Oh, yeah, that's it. Exactly. Okay, that's right. So he has 9 even strength goals, 9 5-on-5 goals, and I believe that's tops in the league is what I read. I think it was Matthew Fairburn of The Athletic. I think that I read that in his article this morning. He did a nice job of, you know, kind of wrapping things up. I'm getting back into it. I'm consuming all this Sabres content because they get me excited, man. I mean, you know, it's been a long time here. Why not get excited about it? You should. Sabres tomorrow against the Flames right here on WGR and along the Sabres radio network. All right, we'll do our best to get as much as we can in here before we get to Patrick Hammer to talk about week number 10 in the National Football League. I already told you about the Munich game. It starts off Giants and Panthers on Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, 3:30 p.m. Munich time. Both teams at 2-7. If you go to the... You know, I use Tankathon. You can go to any site you want. Looking at the NFL draft order right now for next year, there are 9 teams with 2 wins. 7 teams are 2-7. The Panthers went from having the number 1 pick for many weeks to 4. Right now, it would be the Patriots, then the Jags, then the Saints, the Panthers, the Browns. So things are changing as far as the... number 1 pick order in the bottom of the NFL standings. Patriots, speaking of them, we got a Super Bowl 2020 rematch against the Bears. I don't know, which comes to mind. When I think of Patriots-Bears, I think about Super Bowl 20 when I was a kid, 1985. They'll be playing in Chicago, Caleb Williams against Drake May. Is Drake May playing? I think he is, right? Either way, it's going to be Bears looking to go 5-4 and keep pace somewhat as much as they can in the NFC North. NFC North is just a gauntlet right now. I just lost my my little connection here on all the games I'm looking at. Let me go grab another way to be able to do this here. All right. What else we got? Another game coming up. 1 o'clock games. 49ers at Buccaneers. Now, the 49ers getting Christian McCaffrey back, it seems like. That is the word. Kyle Shanahan said, I think he'll be out there. So, looks like that's the case. But how about the Buccaneers? They don't go for two last week. Could have beaten the Chiefs. They'd gone for two. Who knows if they win the game. They dropped to 4-5. It's a big game for both teams. Buccaneers cannot afford, and they don't want to go to 4-6, obviously. 49ers don't want to go to 4-5. The NFC West with the Rams right on their heels right now. Everybody, or should say, Rams kind of picking up right now. Falcons, Saints, and the NFC South. The only way that I think that this game could go the Saints way is because they have a new coach, and a lot of times you get that, you know, new coach firing coach bump kind of thing. Maybe that happens with the Saints. I'm not really sure, but the Falcons are playing really good football as of late. They're 6-3. They started the season off, 1-2, I believe it was. Well, let me go back to their, see, they were 1-2. They've since won 26 points, won with 36 points, won with 38 points, lost with 34. Man, they've scored. And the only game they didn't score, believe it or not, over 30 points was Dallas last week, but they wound up beating them 27-21. That's Falcons at Saints. That will be a 1 p.m. game as well. Broncos are at Chiefs. Yeah, I'm not expecting anything from the Broncos. I thought maybe they'd be able to hang with the Ravens last week. That didn't happen. They got torched on defense. The Broncos are supposed to have a good defense, but maybe they're not as good as we thought. Now, they do have good edge rushers, and the Chiefs, they do struggle a bit at their tackle position, much more than they do in the interior, which is dominant at times. So that would be the path here, and Mahomes has been a little compromised with the ankle, so if you're looking for any path to victory for the Broncos, it would have to be that, because I don't see how Bo Nix is going to score enough points against that Chiefs defense. Pittsburgh Steelers at Washington Commanders. This is an outstanding game right now. These two teams, where they are. Steelers 6-2 leading the AFC North. Commanders 7-2 leading the NFC South. One of the top teams in the conference, in the National Football League, a darling. They have a great young quarterback in Jaden Daniels. But now you're going against Mike Tomlin, a very good pass rush, T.J. Watt and company for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Although they can be run on a little bit. They've shown some leaky run defense at times this year, and the Commanders have some big playability as well. Should be a fun game. I think, obviously, you always want the NFC teams to beat the AFC teams. But maybe, if you're a Bills fan, you want the Steelers to win here to win that division, to keep the Ravens and the Bengals at bay, down fighting for wild card spots, not giving them automatic berths. Minnesota Vikings at Jacksonville Jaguars. No Trevor Lawrence in this game. So the Vikings with Sam Darnold, a 7-point favorite on the road. They should take care of business here in this one. Just a lost season for Jacksonville. Not for Minnesota, though, obviously. He was having a really nice season. They did bounce back last week after a couple of tough losses, but the Jaguars, they're one of those teams fighting at the bottom. And obviously, I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. I guess, well, I mean, sometimes you just don't want to make the change when for the sake of making the change at that time, but eventually you're going to do it. But it feels like, you know, Doug Peterson's days are numbered in Jacksonville unless they can really turn around. But with all those injuries, I think that's a really tall task to ask for. We will take a timeout. We will get to Patrick Hammer from WGRZ TV2 on our weather for this weekend. What's it going to be like here in Buffalo if you're watching the game? What's it like in Indy if you're going to the game? And what's it look like heading into next week here in Western New York? We'll be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. And we'll get to the rest of the NFL schedule this weekend in a little while, but time now to get to the weather. Got a game in a dome. It's a retractable dome. We were talking about that earlier. It's kind of weird. Like, you don't think of Lucas Oil Stadium as being a retractable stadium, but it is. But I'm expecting it's going to be closed this weekend. We'll get the weather from Pat Hammer here as we kind of talk about that and see what, you know, they could possibly do. In the meantime, here in Buffalo, if you're staying back, always a fun time to go out this time of year. Maybe checking out what's going on Thanksgiving, fall, playing some football games, and of course enjoying watching the Buffalo Bills. We'll do that now with Patrick Hammer on the Western Hotline.
Break it down. Time.
And joining me right now on the Western Hotline is Patrick Hammer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. What is going on, my man? Welcome to another Friday. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you, Sal. Wait, you said that they may be closing the – since when did Indianapolis not have a dome stadium?
They have a retractable roof, and it's almost always closed.
Oh.
They can open it if they choose, but they rarely do.
Kind of like Houston, right? Where they rarely – okay.
But they do have a retract – did you – isn't that funny? Like, you don't think of Indy as a retractable roof.
No, never, which is why I wasn't doing a tremendous amount of focus on Indianapolis weather for the game on Sunday, given that I just assumed it was a dome, but knowing that, I guess there's a chance.
I guess so. I haven't received official word, and obviously weather would play a role in that, but from what I saw, you tell me, look like maybe some rain on Sunday anyway, and that would kind of, you know, close that opportunity, I guess, no pun intended. Yeah.
Of course, I did. I can't say I ignored Indianapolis weather. Of course, I read
right,
that.
Of course.
That may be going. Saturday night, Sunday morning early is when the rain would be moving through there. So if hypothetically the dome was to be open, it's looking fine. So if you're traveling to Indy, there is rain. The system that's going to bring us rain on Sunday is going to move through Indianapolis Saturday night on its track here. So there will be rain then maybe early Sunday morning, and then the rest of the day looks just fine. And this storm that's coming is this monster snowstorm in Colorado, like just crazy snow. But as it heads our way and towards Indianapolis and then eventually Buffalo, it's going to run into warm air, and it'll be rain, not snow yet. No, nothing like that yet here just yet.
So this storm that's coming this way, that won't really impact, you know, in that particular fashion this part of the country, you're saying?
No, it is. The storm that's in Denver now is going to be in Buffalo Sunday.
But I mean the snow, in that fashion, though, the snow, that.
No, it's going to be all rain here.
Okay.
We don't see snow for quite a while around here. But
it's wild.
And I know. I'm ready for a little season change, but it's not in the cards over the next week or so. But the good news is, if you're going to be in Indy, Sunday looks fine, close to game time.
All right. What about Saturday evening if you're going to Indy? What does it look like then? Because a lot of people making the trip. I always say it's a great city. I don't know if you've ever been there, but you know, it's a big convention city. They have the NFL Combine every year. Every year there are tons of hotels, tons of great restaurants, steakhouses. Really cool city, I think, in Indianapolis if people want to go visit.
I've been there once, and I was so impressed with the downtown.
Yeah.
Totally walkable, a lot going on. I wasn't there long, but it was a great city. Did I hear this from you or somebody about flights from Indy and Buffalo?
From me.
I thought I heard that a direct flight was added between Indianapolis and Buffalo. Because
would not
so
surprise
many...
me. That happened in Kansas City a few years ago.
That's what I heard. I thought if it wasn't from our sports department, it was from your station. Somebody had said that they are adding a flight direct coming home because of so many expected Bills fans.
Well, get John Scott on it. Find out about that for us.
I
wouldn't be surprised. That actually happened in Kansas City a few years ago. It's very tough. We don't have direct flights from Buffalo to a lot of places, but Kansas City they didn't. And that actually happened when the Bills were playing there. And I noticed, they actually added a flight and, you know, Bills fans jumped on board. This is a good place to go, destination city. It is drivable, but it's a lot easier, obviously, to fly. This isn't Detroit, where you can go like 4.5 hours to Canada, right? It would take a little bit longer, so you could drive it if you want. And some people might, because actually, I've heard people say that what they were planning on doing was going to see Florida State Notre Dame the night before and then going to the Bills-Colts game the next day.
I love it. That's a great weekend menu of sports. I think you had mentioned, or your team had mentioned, when you go to the combine, it's like a 7-hour drive, 8-hour drive about?
Yeah. I try to fly, but I know that I think that's about what it is. If you split the driving and things like that, it doesn't have to be too bad of a drive. What are we looking at this weekend here in Buffalo then? You talked about that storm coming this way. What about as the weekend progresses from now and through the weekend? We have a holiday weekend, obviously, so maybe even into Monday because there's a Sabres game Monday afternoon.
Okay, so here's the deal. After having the warmest Halloween on record, the warmest election day on record, by the way, the weather is taking a little bit of a turn towards the cooler, but certainly not, I wouldn't call it cold. The average high right now is in the low 50s, and that's what we're going to see today. Tomorrow looks spectacular. cobalt blue skies, maybe a few clouds off the lake, but really a nice day, a dry day. A little on the cool side, upper 40s to around 50 degrees. So if you've got outdoor plans, a little honey-do list, some raking, whatever it is, Saturday is your day. Sunday, not so much. That system over Colorado will arrive. Most likely you wake up Sunday morning, it's dry. You may have a few hours there to get some stuff done, but by late morning, but certainly by the middle part of the day and into the afternoon, some rain coming. Temperatures in the 50s, so it's going to be rain, no snow. So the first half of the weekend is the good part, a little damp for the second half.
What about into the holiday week? Monday's a holiday, then into next week.
Yeah, Veterans Day on Monday, some clouds and a couple of spotty showers, but not a big deal. I think you've got some usable time outside on Monday. Nothing that I think should, you know, get in the way of too many plans, but it's not going to be as beautiful as it was earlier today. Today, the clouds are going to begin rolling in today, by the way, if you've been out enjoying the sun.
All right. Now, obviously, I don't want to put you in a position 10 days out because that's always tricky to do, but the Bills do have a home game against the Kansas City Chiefs at 4:25 p.m. a week from Sunday. Are you still seeing this kind of calmer, not shaky weather pattern? As you just said, we're not going to be really seeing any, you know, drastic change as far as snow or anything like that. What are you seeing kind of long term here?
So do not see a turn to cold. I do see a turn to cooler by the end of next week. Rain showers here Thursday into Friday. There is another weak weather system coming in behind it for Sunday afternoon. Here's what it won't be. It's not going to be cold. Okay. We can rule out cold. It's 10 days out, so I can't say or guarantee a dry Sunday at this point. There is a weak weather system that's going to be kind of skirting through, it looks like, on Sunday. But I'm just glad the game. If it was a Thursday night game, I would be worried because that's when we're going to get wet here again. The system that comes behind it for here on Sunday doesn't look that important. I think we're going to be okay, but I can't rule out some showers for next Sunday evening.
All right. Well, hey, that's okay. 4:25 p.m. game then. That's a Sunday. Then there's a bye week. Then there's a bye week, and then it's Thanksgiving, and then a night game against the Niners. Man,
and the Bills are home for like a month. Do you see that? Yeah. They have the bye and then two back-to-back home games. So,
Let me look here. So, actually, there's a bye week. After this game on November 10th, their next road game isn't until December 8th in L.A. That's right.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. The reverse happened earlier this year, though. If you remember, they played at home on the 23rd and did not play at home again until October 20th.
I was concerned that the Bills players weren't going to remember where the stadium was. It was so long between home games. It's like, okay, guys, it's Orchard Park. Remember that. It's reverse. It's a nice a nice time of the year that they don't have to travel either. So that'll be good for a couple weeks.
All right, buddy. Keep us updated. If anything changes on Sunday, I'll make sure to let the listeners know. Have a great weekend, and thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next Friday.
See you next Friday. Bye, guys.
All right, that is Patrick Hamer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. Looks all right. Sounds good then. Go have some good. Go have a good time in Indy. Have a good time Saturday night here, and then Sunday. Don't worry, rain. So what? You're gonna watch the Bills game. Sit inside, watch it, and of course, turn down the TV, turn up the radio, the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. For Chris Brown and Eric Wood, and I'll be down on the field. It is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. We'll come back after this. We'll wrap it up for you with a final look at the late games on Sunday. All right, just looking at what Sean McDermott said to the local media after he was on here on the Extra Point Show. And he did tell the local media down at One Bills Drive, it looks like it's going to be multiple weeks for Keon Coleman, but he's not sure if he needs to go on IR right now. So that's still a discussion they're having. So I would say what I said earlier, maybe this week and next week, and then through the bye, by then you don't put him on IR if that's the case. You got to make a call, though, because you got the roster spot, right? But who knows? If you get, my guess is he's not playing this week or next week against the Chiefs, which stinks because that's Coleman against Worthy, right? But get him healthy. But it is a conversation. The good news is it doesn't seem like it's super long term by listening to that and hearing that and reading that. All right. So that's what he said about that. I also thought it was interesting. He said good chance that we're going to see both Quentin Jefferson and Jordan Phillips play on Sunday against the Colts. That is one of the 1 p.m. games. We already ran through the rest of them. At 4:05, Titans are at Chargers. Two good defenses here. The difference is the Chargers can also play a little bit of offense. They're not great, but Justin Herbert's been playing really good football as of late, and they've scored 27 and 26 their last two games. I think the Chargers should be able to really take care of the Titans here in this spot. Titans are 2-6. They go to L.A. Jets, 3-6. They go to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. Here we go again. Well, this Jets love after a win. The Cardinals are tough, though. I don't think the Jets are... could just go walk into Arizona and beat them. I think it's a tough game for them. The Cardinals need a win here. Cardinals at 5-4. They're looking in the NFC West at the Rams right behind them at 4-4. Niners at 4-4. This is a half-game lead the Cardinals have. The Jets, if they win, they could sneak into the 8th seed in the AFC tied with some other teams. It's a big game for both teams. The Jets lose this game and drop to 3-7. I mean, we've been saying this for a while. It's kind of lights out, right? Maybe not with mathematically because the conference is so bad with the haves and have-nots, but boy, that would be tough. Eagles at Cowboys, 4:25 start. By the way, Jets-Cardinals also 4:25. Eagles-Cowboys, 4:25. I mean, are the Eagles going to run for 800 yards in this game? They could. The Cowboys are so bad at stopping the run, and the Eagles are so good at running the ball with Saquon Barkley. And last time they played, I think he went off on them, if I remember right. Was that right? Earlier in the year? They played earlier in the year? No, they haven't played. That was the Giants when he played last week, a couple weeks ago. Either way. Where are the Eagles here? Oh, yeah, the Giants. Remember that? Saquon. What did Saquon do against the Giants a few weeks ago? 176, 10.4 yards a carry. Might be better, maybe more this time around. Dak Prescott not playing. Cooper Rush going to play. Boy, the Cowboys are just bad. The Eagles at 6-2. You know, there was a lot of questions about them. Then they go to their bye at 2-2. They've won 4 in a row. This will be 5 in a row when they beat the Cowboys. And they're looking a lot better. And Jalen Hurts is playing a lot better, by the way. Lions at Texans. Big game here. Interesting game. This is your Sunday night game. Lions at Texans. Texans are a little bit reeling. Speaking of wide receiver injuries, we'll see about Nico Collins. They've now won. They've rotated wins, losses the last 4 games after beating the Bills. They've beaten the Patriots, lost to the Packers, beat the Colts, lost to the Jets. And they've had some close games. 2 points, 3 points, and 8 points their last game. That last one against the Jets there. The Texans, they lose on Thursday night. They do have a 10-day break. Then they get this game. The Lions. Lions are just too tough, man. They're so, so good at everything they do. It's going to be a tough game, I think, for the Texans. I'm going to take the Lions to win this game in Houston against the Texans, who, if they go to 6-4, things are a bit interesting there where they are, right? They kind of get in that group. Although the division, as long as the Bills beat the Colts, they shouldn't have any threat in the division. But if the Colts happen to upset the Bills and Texans win, man, look out. All right, Dolphins at Rams Monday night. We'll talk more about that game. But Dolphins season was said to be on the line last week. It kind of truly is this week because mathematically, like I said, they're still in it. But the Rams, they're the team here. They are truly coming alive. And now they're getting guys back. Their offensive line is getting healthy. They're getting guys back from injury. The Bills play the Rams. Looking at the Bills' schedule going forward, I mean, the Bills get this week, obviously, the Colts at their place. Then they come back against the Chiefs, 4:25. Then it's a bye week. Then it's a Sunday night game against the Niners. Go to L.A., go to Detroit. I mean, some tough games coming up here for the Buffalo Bills, obviously. But this week, a game, to me, they should take care of business. I like the Bills this week. I think that they should take care of the Indianapolis Colts. Don't make mistakes. The Colts are not a team, to me, that should be making plays all over the field. Don't give them life. Don't give them extra free opportunities. Take care of the football. Run the ball on them. I'm fine with the Bills running 40 times in this game. Win this game like you did week 2 against the Dolphins. Totally fine with that if the Bills. That's the way I look at it. So we'll see. That game is Sunday at 1 p.m. We'll have pregame coverage all morning long starting at 8 a.m. here on WGR and along the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. In the meantime, Sabres tomorrow. Going to have Sports Talk Saturday, Sabres pregame tomorrow, Sabres game, puck drops at 12:30, and then at 1 o'clock, excuse me, Monday, another game at 12:30. Got a really great weekend on tap for you here in Buffalo Sports. Maybe the Sabres can keep it going. They'll talk about it next on Sabres Live. Thanks for being with me. Have a great weekend.